listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's me, Bob Dean, The Bob Dean Show. Yay. Today, I've got some really special people, along with my co-host for the time, is Linda B. Schneider. You remember her, that beautiful blonde from Pennsylvania. And today we have Larry Thomas, Dave Buglioni, and Jimmy Hoyson.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks for having us on, Bob. We're all excited to be here today.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on. And to Larry Thomas has been on my show once before, a while back, with Kathy St. George. And these two fellows are new to me. I am Bob Dean. And Mr. Hoyson, tell us about you. Where are you from?
From Pittsburgh originally. I spent a bulk of my career in Los Angeles. I was there for 32 years in the music business. And then I came back to Pittsburgh to help my family through some health issues. And so here I am.
That's understandable. I did the same thing with my family when I was living in Miami for a long time. And my, as Linda knows, my dad was from Uniontown and my mom was from Brownsville.
Oh, wow. So you probably heard of Cheat Lake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we do a lot of songs.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said we do a lot of boating down at Cheat Lake.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes.
Okay, now let's switch over here to Mr. Buglioni. We've had you on before, too, but that was just by telephone interview, Dave.
Yes, it was. I was a surprise guest in that episode.
It was awesome. Well, you're a good-looking young man. No wonder you're the star. Larry, you know what I love about what cracks me up? Because I am so technologically challenged. But, you know, all of our little particles are going up into space and coming right back down. When, Larry, you're just across town or close to me. Where exactly are you in L.A.?
In Van Nuys, in the valley.
Yeah. I'm Milk Santa Monica for the address. I'm right where Brentwood and Santa Monica come together. You can walk to where O.J. killed Nicole from my place. That's my big selling point.
I remember driving over there with Kathy when we did your show live.
Yeah, the West Side. Well, you know, I don't know. Van Nuys is beautiful. I like it down there. It's just real. I mean, I love the style of the homes and everything, you know, and they're just the right size for me.
And yeah, course, well, that's what my house is. It's one of those, what they call California bungalows, you know?
Yeah.
It's a small house, you know, just built around the time of the war and so forth. And when most of the houses went up around, you know.
You know, that's what's so interesting, that the Los Angeles, you know, urban development is something I love. And we're going to get to the project, guys. You know, I have to shamelessly, monopolize conversation for a little bit. I was sitting there. When I got out of the shower, I was thinking, does Dr. Phil talk about himself as much as I do? Anyway.
But, you know, I was just with them in Pittsburgh yesterday.
Right. And
you know, so much. It was at, what, 10 degrees?
10 degrees, yes. Yeah. If we were lucky, it was 10. I think
and
it was
every time, you know, I visited Linda for the past 20 years, I run on her street, you know, and I just finally realized on this last visit that 10 degrees is my limit.
It's too cold. Yeah. My sister used to live in Goldsboro, which is the top of the Poconos, my sister and my brother-in-law. And my deal was I'd always go in the wintertime. 3 days was the max, you know, because they're way up. They live in this A-frame out in the middle of the woods and all this, stuff. And I would love the first two nights, you know, it's snowing, it's all romantic and quiet and everything, and you're sitting in front of that fire. But by the third day, I'm like, get me off this mountain, man. I need police. You know, horns honking and shit. But so anyway, let's get on to the project. Linda Schneider, we are talking about the Gaslight Cafe, the John Mitchell story.
Correct.
And we've been touching on the Gaslight Cafe and this project quite a bit. And it's so exciting that, why don't you take it and tell our audience what's going on with that?
Sure. As most of you know, I was in New York a couple of times in the fall, both in October and again in November. And one of the reasons I was there was working on this project. And as a result of all that, as well as the presentation that we did last June in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the World of Bob Dylan, all of this has culminated in a couple of new projects that are coming up really, really fast. And that's why we're all together working on this, writing a script for a live performance, immersive theater / mini concert that's coming up in New York City on April 27th, Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. at The Cutting Room. So we're very, very pleased to be presenting this there, and we're very excited. And we were also just today asked to be the grand finale of Carnegie Mellon University, which, as you know, is one of the top drama schools in the world.
Yes,
has asked to be the grand finale for their CMU International Film Festival in April.
Kudos to all of you guys, man. That is really exciting.
It is so exciting. You know, to be asked by them is quite an honor. So we're working diligently on getting the script finished. That's Larry was in town, Dave in town, Jimmy and I are both from Pittsburgh. So we were working diligently to get this whole project together. My nice blue accessory. I fell trying to get to a photo shoot for Mary Travers and broke my shoulder and my arm up at the top of the humerus. So.
Oh, she's old. Oh my God. We talked on the.
And she's still going. She doesn't stop.
Your lovely daughter Nora picked up the phone because we, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we always do this back and forth thing. Like, and Sam's like, "Where's everybody?" And I'm like, but it's kind of fun. Not for Sam. Sorry, Sam. Hey, bud.
Sorry, Sam.
Sam is our producer, and he does everything for LA Talk Radio. He's the best. But Nora answered the phone, and I said, "What is your one-armed mom doing her makeup?" But yeah, I'm getting ready to go. I have to go in for rotator cuff surgery. I had it on this arm, so I know what to expect.
Oh, yes.
What's next? And it's just like, I'm just, you know, I got, knock wood, I got a great Los Angeles surgeon, Michael Gerhardt, who was referred to me by, you know, and he did the three surgeries after my accident. But I know what to expect. That I just, my range of motion sucks and all that. But it's just, I just don't, it's not the surgery, it's the downtime after.
It's the downtime.
Yeah.
Oh.
But your little sleeve looks good. So
show must go on, and we're really, really excited about this. Larry Thomas is going to be directing it. Jimmy and I and Dave are producing, and as well, Dave is the leading man who plays John Mitchell.
Jimmy's actually the musical director.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. You're the musical director, and
he is the music.
Yes, you have an achievement of 6 Grammys. That is pretty. It's fucking awesome, man.
Door stops.
That's what my friend Paul Deacon, he's a drummer. If you're familiar with the Mavericks, they're a pretty cool band.
Yeah.
And all those guys are friends of mine from Miami. They had just been signed with MCA when I was running this haunted bar on Miami Beach. And they were blah, blah, blah. They're all really good friends of mine. But that's what Paul was saying. You know, he's got, he uses this Grammy as a doorstop or keep the window.
Well, I had to drag this information out of this one the first time I met him.
That's what you were telling me. That's a really cool story too.
Yes. Didn't know who he was, and he wasn't giving it up easily, but I finally drug the info out of him.
You don't have that Los Angeles attitude of, don't you know who
he's
I am?
Modest. That's he showed me a list the other day of the musical acts he's worked with. I don't think you can imagine a great musician that you've ever heard of that he hasn't worked with. I was looking down this list going, oh my God, any great musician that you've ever heard of is on his list.
Well, there was some luck involved. I was at the right place at the right time. I started a studio called The Village Recorder. Now it's called The Village Studios. And so right away I was in with mega stars, fortunately, and I hung in there and worked super hard.
Well, your achievements are pretty outstanding, buddy.
Thank you.
You know, I've had other people in your line of work on The Bob Dean Show. Yeah. Whenever I say The Bob Dean Show, when we're in studio, it's a sarcastic, like, whoa. But Eden Alpert, who is Herb Alpert's daughter, they have the club of Vibrato up at the top of Beverly Glen, which is like the coolest jazz club in L.A. And She's pretty awesome. It was really neat that he went to Fairfax High with Phil Spector and, oh my God, this really, I think the name in just a moment, but it's really cool to talk to musicians, actors, you know, about our craft and all, but it's really neat to know the backstory, you know, on how you started and that sort of thing.
It was who I met and proved myself quickly and, you know, fortunate to get a job at a major studio. You know, once you're in, if you're doing a good job and you're working hard, then, you know, your foot's in the door and hopefully you can stay with it. So I actually worked with, speaking of Herb Albert, I was an assistant engineer on the Rattle and Hum album that you two did early on. And Herb Albert was there at that time. It was called A&M, Herb Albert and Jerry Moss. So I was like, oh, this is meet Herb Albert. Okay. So you never know who you're going to meet. So you have to be on your best behavior.
Especially when you can keep it on the DL like you do. So tell us about, now, how long have you been acting, David? Fuck Dave, whatever you prefer.
Oh, I've been acting probably ever since I was about 14 years old. I got a minor.
Where's your home?
I'm born and raised in Long Island, New York.
That's right. We had touch. Yeah. Okay. So 14, then, you started?
Yes. And then I got my minor in theater. I just started getting into the business. I moved out to L.A. I lived out in L.A. for about 15 years. And that's where I got my real start. Wound up coming to Pittsburgh, actually, to do a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal called Southpaw, the boxing movie. And, I like to get involved in the community and get to know people in town. And I went to an event and Linda was there and we just hit it off, you know, right off the bat. That's and cool. She invited me to, you know, some of the other charity events that were in town. And, you know, as I was doing the movie, you know, every weekend I would go to a different charity event in town. And then,
Or lay by the pool.
Oh, lay by the pool, too, and have a cocktail.
Your favorite thing in the world.
I guess it was, what, a year or two later?
A year or two later, yeah.
I got a phone call saying, hey, listen, I want you to, you know, put yourself on tape for John Mitchell. And I read the story, and once I read the story, I fell in love with this character.
Must be exciting for you because he was an interesting guy.
Interesting.
And from Pittsburgh, too. And from John Pittsburgh. Mitchell.
What the hell?
Yep, Dormont.
The 6 degrees of separation. Now, Larry, do you have any connection with Pittsburgh at all besides having friends there? Because I'm like my parents and all you guys living there and all that stuff.
Really, it's in the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, definitely, because before Linda and I became friends, which was about 21 years ago, I was touring with the female version of The Odd Couple starring Barbara Eden, and we played the Byam Theater. So that was my first time in Pittsburgh. And I thought it was the coolest city. We spent about a week there. And then, you know, when I met Linda, I came for a party at her house and we just became like immediate friends. And then she hooked me up to be the MC of the Easter Seals Western Pennsylvania Cotillion. And I did that like twice. And we just became such good friends. I kept coming there every chance I got. And I was sort of a spokesperson on your log home company, and
which is fascinating. It's fabulous in itself.
We became really close, and Pittsburgh kind of became almost a second home to me. But it always pops up. I mean, when I was going to college theater, even though I was at first a triple threat, I couldn't sing, couldn't dance, couldn't act. But for some reason, people, you know, whenever I would like just, you know, fake it, all the students would call me Gene Kelly. And he was my very first autograph picture I ever had. And I love Gene Kelly. And, you know, he's from Pittsburgh. And then I ended up studying for 10 years with a man, an acting teacher, the late Milton Caselas, and he's from Pittsburgh. And his brother, one of his brothers, Tasso Caselas, designed the Pittsburgh airport. So, yeah, so I feel like I am connected to Pittsburgh, even though I didn't grow up there or anything, but I call it, like, you know, one of my home cities.
You're an honorary resident.
Yes.
An honorary Pittsburghian. Well, Linda B. Schneider and her effervescent personality just kind of suck you in because she's so cool. Linda, you know, Kathy St. George introduced us, and hi, Kat. And
hey, Kathy, get well soon, babe. We miss you.
I feel like I've known you forever, Linda. You're just very open and warm, and you know.
Thank you. I feel the same, Bob. I've really enjoyed the time we spent together doing these podcasts and putting everything together last minute, last second, and still somehow it works perfectly.
Well, you know, I've already got some cogs going dee 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 because the Bob Dean Show, yeah, it's actually, I'm very proud of it. You know, our first, and I'm not going to talk about myself, but the first 89 episodes that we did are on, well, I'm not going to mention it in front of us, but I've had, because I've been a bar, I'm an actor and a comedian, which means I'm a bartender. And I've been a bartender for 43 years. I started in Miami. The movie Scarface was entirely accurate. I cannot believe I'm not dead or in a 12-step program. But already the cogs are turning because through guests that I've had, you know, I'm not going to go into names and that sort of thing, but guests that I've had in the music industry, mostly from like behind the scenes, producers that they're retired now, but man, Shel Talmay, do you know that name?
Of course.
Shel Talmay's been on my show twice. Yay. He's great. Wow. He is friggin' awesome. And I'm trying to think of his name. He passed away because, you know, when you get to this, I'm taking my Prevagen now. Because these are people that I and respect a lot, but the names are flying right out because I didn't know we were going to go in this direction a little bit. But I'll think of his name. But he was the one that he discovered, or was the Beach Boys. God, what is his name? His lovely wife Cheryl. I know all these people from bartending in Beverly Hills. That's how the doors opened. And acting, I've got friends. You know, Rocky. This is one of my favorite stories. Rocky Carroll from NCIS. He's that good-looking black guy that's always up on, you know, the head with the suit, looking down.
Right.
He is friggin' awesome. He and his lovely wife and daughter, and he came on the show and had a great time. We went. He said, "Let's go for a drink." So we go to Craig's, and I have this old Chrysler convertible that makes me look like I'm somebody when I'm driving it. And we pull in front of Craig's, and which is, ladies and gentlemen that don't know, it's a real popular hot spot where the paparazzi hangs out in on Melrose, and he gets out. You know, you could wear a ball cap and jeans, and there goes that paparazzi. And now I understand why you guys hate paparazzi, because not hate it. I mean, it's essential, I guess, in some ways. But sometimes the people, you know, artists get so, you can, because out of nowhere, there's like 1,000 of those flashes. They're taking pictures of Rocky Carroll, and the one guy starts taking pictures of me. And Rocky was very, you know, like, thank you. And I, on the other hand, was jumping up and down as high as this old body would go. And I'm waving my arms and everything. And this one guy goes, "Well, who are you?" And I go, "I'm nobody." So my whole point about that is that through Linda, if it's okay, we'll work on getting, if you guys would like to come back on already. But we'll do it in different groups. Is that cool?
Perfect.
That'd be great.
Excellent. Now let's talk, you guys, I want you to just, the four of you to talk about your project. And, you know, what's so neat, too, is that I had no idea, because, of course, who doesn't love The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, right? Great friggin' And the club itself, I mean, I remember saying to my friend, I'm like, I wonder if this is a set or it's real, because I said, it's got to be real. It's just too, you know, you can even see the cigarette burns in the bar kind of thing, you know, in my mind.
Right, you really can.
And, but why don't you, please, you guys just take it, and I want to hear what, anything you'd like to talk about it together? Because I can't wait to see this.
If I could start by saying that this past week that we were all together, the script is just phenomenal. You have to come out April 27th and the 28th. Yes. We're going to do a Sunday show as well. It's going to be a brunch show. So Saturday night the 27th and then Sunday brunch. But this script is filled with comedy I mean, it pulls on your heartstrings. Drama, the music. I mean, it has everything a performance, you know, desires. And you have to come and see the show. That's all I have to say. The work that we've done this week on this script is just phenomenal.
Yes, I absolutely concur. And Jimmy's creative genius, Larry, can tell you about some of the arrangements and little subtle things that he does that just make that soundtrack come alive, you know?
The music, oh my gosh, it's so wonderful how music can put something together like that too.
And me and Larry were able to go into the studio this past week to actually see, you know, the behind the scenes and, you know, how Jimmy, you know, works. We had one of our talent there actually recording. And I mean, that was just an experience alone in itself. I mean, just phenomenal talent that we have in this show.
Yeah, we have fantastic singers. This was with Sloane Simon. She's going to be our Mary Travers. We have great singers. You know, it's almost like I feel we're so lucky to have such great songs to begin with. So it's low-hanging fruit to do a great job with all this stuff, because just the material is wonderful. We have great singers, the performances. So some of it comes so easy.
Yes, we've got, you know, Sloane Simon. We've got, this is kind of a new thing that we just this week added, Trey Nation, who lead singer for the Ghost Towns, opening act for the Stones. So we've got some considerable coming into this.
Great singer.
You know, surely there's got to be room for a walk-in part for someone like me.
No, there's no room.
No, not for Hitchcock. You're always like doing a cameo in all of his films, like Walking the Dogs and the Birds and stuff.
Right.
We'll see. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Like in Pee-wee's Big Adventure when he played the bellboy.
Yes.
Stephen King is another one that always puts himself in his own movies. So.
Well, Alfred Hitchcock, I think. He started
that.
Hitchcock was always in.
Just ended up in the table room.
Yeah, we'll let you know. Don't call us.
What Jimmy was saying about low-hanging fruit because of the great songs is, yeah, these are all songs, you know, or half the songs are all like really well-known, you know, classic folk fodder. But Jimmy has done arrangements with these songs that weren't there originally that bring out, you know, what they were about and what they were for. And that's what really impresses me, because I like playing music like a little bit as a hobby, you know. And I've worked with a few producers, but, you know, I'm really impressed with what he does, and he cuts right to the heart of it. So not only are the songs great, but we have, you know, they have put together this group of young singing talent that is, it's astounding. They sound like the real people, and they're all incredibly good. And then these musical arrangements of these songs we all know are just new and really impactful. So, you know, Dave and I have this sort of job to, we got to come up to that, because it's a journey through music and story, you know. That's the evening, basically. And it's, you know, script wise and, you know, acting wise for those scenes, we got to come up to this amazing musical aspect of this that was already there. They've done it, as you know from Linda, a couple of times at some pretty impressive places. And, you know, I've heard the musical part of it, and it's incredible. So, you know, Dave and I are working on, you know, our dramatic interludes through the music to tell the story. And, you know, I think our big thing is, especially for a New York audience, is, you know, you have to have everything. You know, you have to have drama, but you have to have irony and humor. And, you know, the music's already there. But so we're working on on that, and bringing in all the irony we can and the dramatic aspects of the life of John Mitchell. And I think, yeah, like Dave said, we did some really immersive work this past few days.
John Mitchell, refresh my memory, please, Linda B. I like calling you Linda B. Schneider, if that's okay.
Okay.
Linda B. Schneider. John Mitchell, wasn't he a car salesman, you were telling it, right? And
he
before
was,
he
was
opened the coffee up. House?
Right. He was in the war. He came home from the war back to Pittsburgh and was a used car salesman. And he took a trip to Greenwich Village to visit a friend. And he got a flat tire and decided to stay. So his first foray once he was in the village was Cafe Figaro, which was really the first ever coffee house to totally provide coffee and pastries. And that was it. There was nothing else. And that was a huge success. He sold that, and then he wanted to go into the cultural aspect. And the Gaslight actually had been there, I believe it was like the 1930s when it first ever opened up, not as the Gaslight, but as like a cultural hub where people came who were talented and hung out together and collaborated and wrote together. And John wanted to take that to a whole different level by having beat poets and serving coffee. And he actually brought in the folk singers to turn over the tables, because the people who came to see the beatniks would stay all day and they would drink coffee and smoke cigarettes and listen to poetry. And he needed to turn over the tables. So
Black
Tom told us, if you didn't turn over the tables within 10 minutes of going on stage, you were fired. And interesting thing about John Mitchell, he constantly fired Tom Paxton. Tom Paxton was full-time employed there, and he had this very military look because he had been in the Army. And so John somehow got it in his mind that he was an undercover spy. And so at least once a week, he would fire Tom Paxton. And then Tom one day didn't show up. John called him. He's like, where are you? And he's like, you fired me, John. You fired me. He's like, have I ever fired you before? And he's like, yeah, you fire me every week. He's like, well, then where are you? Why aren't you here?
And also, John Mitchell also wanted to start a club where he can actually pay performers. And performers just didn't receive money from, you know, tips or the basket that went around the coffee shop. He was the first one to actually sit down and write checks to all of his performers so they can live and eat. And survive.
Wow.
Yes.
What a pioneer.
And they were all very young. And they were like in their 19, 20, 21 years old when they were there at the Gaslight, and he called them his kids. So he was
sort of like how Mitzi Shore was with the Comedy Store as far as being a mentor to so many, you know, young performers.
Exactly. So the portrayal on The Marvelous Ms. Maisel is in some aspects very true and other aspects not so true.
Tell us about, I'm just...
Finger snapping, Jimmy.
Finger snapping. I guess John Mitchell was threatened to be sued, right?
That's right.
He was bothering his neighbor. Someone was complaining about
the lady who lived upstairs.
Yeah, and so I guess it was he himself that initiated the finger snapping. I don't know where the actual idea came from, what person.
Well,
it was him.
So what happened, was people were just making too much noise, and the tenants that lived upstairs from the Gaslight, you know, they couldn't sleep at night. So he got, you know, a violation of, you know, noise. So he had to go to court, and he actually hired Ed Koch.
Yes, his attorney was Ed Koch for this, young Ed Koch.
They went to court and, you know, he paid his fines, and then he came back and he had to, you know, come up with a solution of how to keep his coffee shop open and still, you know, and he just came up with the finger snapping. And what he kind of implemented into the coffee shop was that this was going to be the new cool thing to do. This was going to be hip. So if you did it, you were cool. And then everybody just started snapping along to the music, and that's how he kept the noise down.
Genius, really.
You know, everybody mimics that at some point because it's hilarious. It's great.
What a TV show that used that in their theme song, 77 Sunset Strip.
Oh, 77. I love that friggin' show. The only reason why I still have Spectrum Cable.
77 Sunset Strip. I can't set my fingers.
Well, isn't the Addams Family?
Those shows are so cool to me to speak for the cars. The Addams Family. Yeah. Lisa Loring passed last year, didn't she, in 2023?
Yes, she did. She was a friend of Larry's, especially a longtime friend of Larry's for 20 some years.
I remember so Larry talking
in your high school.
I'm so sorry about your friend, Larry.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, she was actually a friend of Kathy's too. She's one that introduced me to Kathy, you know, but she was such a wonderful human being and just had some, you know, hard health troubles, neck surgery, broken hip, and, you know, things were tough on her. And we were watching the Emmys and, you know, in their in memoriam, they skipped her, yet they had this big, huge section on Wednesday, you know, from the news show. Mm. So I found out that I should have contacted the Emmys sometime this year and submitted her, because I guess you have to do that. And I just kind of took it for granted, you know, well, someone that important in TV history, you know, they're just going to do it. And I'm wishing I had done it, because I do, you know, I do have experience in the fact that I would never have had an Emmy nomination if I didn't go into the TV Academy and pay $100 and fill out a form. You know, I it was just a weird light bulb idea I had way back in, you know, 95 to do that. And I ended up with the nomination. I don't have the doorstop, unfortunately. Tim Conway got that, along with his other four
somebody.
Tim Conway is a good choice.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, I his son, Tim Conway Jr., had a radio show here in Burbank. And I remember doing his show one night, you know, and he said, say, you know, something about, you know, competing with my dad. And I just said, well, put it this way. When I heard Estelle Getty announce your father's name, it was the only time I ever heard the name Tim Conway and didn't smile.
Right? I met Carol Burnett for the first time about 6 months ago at Carmine's restaurant, where I got fired from. Thank you so much, Kim. I burn bridges, baby, but she's all right. You know, it's a long story. But Carol Burnett came in with, I guess it's her, you know, her associate, her companion, this nice lady. And she came up to the bar and she handed me a little card. And of course, you're just awestruck, you know. And I've met so many celebrities from working in Beverly Hills. And hey, Miss Burnett, I am Bob Dean. And thank you for the laughter. Or thank you for the music, or thank you for the entertainment, the drama, you know. And she just was the coolest lady. And she handed me her little card on how she likes her Cosmopolitan made. And I said, Miss Burnett, I got you covered, because I am the third person in the world to ever have a Cosmopolitan, which is a fact. My friend Cheryl Cook invented that drink at the Strand restaurant on South Beach.
Oh, wow.
And I ran the Lasso Lounge, which was the coolest it was haunted, that where the Mavericks opened up for us on. And that's when I found out the urinal was haunted when the Mavericks were playing on stage. And oh my God, it's a whole nother story for another episode, because it's really cool that this guy anyway, where was I? See, here I go. We're talking about Lisa Loring and then into Carol Burnett and Tim Conway. You know, I go to YouTube after two martinis and I still have half a pack of cigarettes and make a third. And I start off looking for, you know, the Parthenon in Nashville, Tennessee. And the next thing you know, it's 6 hours later and I'm listening to Leslie Gore sing, you know, and I'm like, what? But the point is I go to watch the Carol Burnett, especially Eunice and Mama. Or Tim Conway played Mickey from the hardware store.
Yes, I got to meet Vicki Lawrence in the last year, and she was a delight.
You know, Linda, I did too for the first time at the Hollywood show in Burbank.
Yeah, I met her at Still City Con.
Yeah, that's the one I didn't do, but. I was talking to Jimmy at length about this, about meeting your idols, and, you know, like, I don't often have the guts to speak to them, so I write them notes. But when I was sitting like one table away from Vicki Lawrence, I had to walk up to her table, and luckily I knew her handler, you know, personally. And I just said, you know, my life would be a whole lot poorer had you not been in it. You know, I mean, sheer entertainment as a kid, that, you know, but, you know, we talked a lot about that, about meeting these people that had such an effect on your life that they, in a way, you know, probably changed it. And that is part of this story with John Mitchell, because, you know, he was always very troubled personally, you know, and didn't like give himself credit that he created a place where these kids could create that so changed the world and influenced
Yeah, he was kind of like Jimmy, and that he didn't tell anybody a lot about what he was doing. When I first started working on this project and I was doing research, his own family really didn't know to the extent that he had changed the world and the things he had done. All they knew was he had a coffee shop in New York and they wanted to know more about it. So it was Dylan's Chronicles, his autobiography, that started the path of researching to find out all the things that he did. And Noel Paul Stuckey was a huge part of that. He let me tape and gave us rights to use his interview about all the things that happened at the Gaslight, because he was master of ceremonies before there was a Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Oh, and yeah.
It's fascinating. The story is absolutely fascinating. And part of what we're dealing with in the narrative part of it is the difficulties that constantly hit John Mitchell just to open it up in the first place and keep it open.
Yes.
You know, had he not been this incredible, unstoppable force, there probably never would have been a Gaslight. So right. We're really trying to bring that out.
Man, I cannot wait to see this project when it's finished.
It's really so cool. It's got so many stories within the other story. It kind of like is layers like an onion, and you keep peeling back and you keep finding more and more, and there's more connections.
That's why you have to come to the cutting room, April 27th in New York City.
I think I'll be there.
All right. Very good.
I'll take it now. I am my friend Webb Sanderson and from high school, he and Kelly Babington, they bought a farm in Arkansas, and he's a gourmet chef, blah blah blah. The point is that they're going to start doing their own music festival, which is a freaking awesome idea, and I'm going to be the MC. It's at the beginning of April. Now, whoop-de-doo, finally.
Cool.
I just thought of something, you guys. I know this is very unprofessional, but first of all, here's a Nancy, my autographed Nancy shirt. But I just looked up on my memorabilia shelf, and I got to show you guys this. So feel free to enjoy the sofa backdrop here. Hold on, fell behind my mirror here. But this is a really important thing. I'm very proud of and have to show you. Now, first of all, this was just next to it, so I figured I'd show you this too. This is my hip bone. my actual hip bone. Has nothing to do with it. Yeah, when I had my hip replacement because of the accident that I had, I don't remember saying it, but apparently I said, I want my hip bone. If you're taking it out, it's mine. Like when they put a muffler on your head. And 2 months later, I get this call from St. John's Hospital. It's head monitor. They're like, Mr. Dean, your hip bone's ready to be picked up. And I was like, what? But now it's a conversation. Now, speaking of doorstops, this, ladies and gentlemen, I won first place in the hairiest back contest on a carnival cruise.
I saw the pictures.
And you tell people about that.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, Larry, what I was through Sunda Kronquist, if y'all aren't familiar with her, you need to be. She has the LA School of Comedy. She was the headliner at the Laugh Factory on Saturday nights for many, many years. She's a black Swedish Jew, and she's hilarious. And I was doing this through her. I was blessed to get the opportunity to do a lot of shows at the Laugh Factory, which for any comic, you know, it's just marvelous. So this kid was talking about millennials. I'm going to make it brief. And anyway, he started losing his shit on stage. He couldn't pull it together. He didn't have his core act. So he just took off his clothes, except for he's this real hot young 22-year-old guy. And he's wearing these little tiny bikini underpants. And he's like, this is what a millennial looks like, you boomers. And I was like, oh, please. So it's my turn to do my set. I get up and I'm like a blue blazer, khaki pants kind of guy. Well, I started undressing. And I'm talking into the microphone, took off my jacket, threw it down, unlooped my tie, threw it down, took off my button-down shirt. So I'm wearing like a crew neck, and then I open my starch khaki pants, and they go right down to my knees. So I'm standing there in my boxers and my shirt, and every, you know, people are laughing, and you know, and some are going, and then I take off my shirt, and I'm telling you guys, my body hair, which I used to be so self-conscious about, has gotten me so many laughs. So I take off my shirt, and everybody's like, yay, and I'm starting to flex like the kid was, and then I go, hey, Brent, and then I turn around, and I'm telling you guys, my back is fucking scary. And half the audience was like, oh, my God. The other half was stood up and applauded. And I'm like, this is your future.
This is your future. Well, you know, I don't know if it was hip in the 80s, but there was a book called Iron John. And it was about, you know, men, you know, learning to be men and all that stuff. But there was a fable in there, and it was about a guy who had long golden hair and in a tribe of dark haired people. So he kept it under a hat. And then one day, you know, the hat came off and all this golden hair came down and he became the leader of the tribe. And it was all about, you know, your most embarrassing or whatever, you know, that you think is your curse is really your gift. And, you know, in my life, I grew up, my mother thought I had such a problem with my temper that she actually put me in child guidance psychology. You know, I had a psychiatrist when I was like 7 years old. And, you know, what am I known for now? The guy who yells at people. We always have to remember that our most embarrassing, you know, hidden trait is probably our greatest gift, you know.
It is giving me strength, like Samson's hair or whatever it is, you know, because like I said, growing up, it was because this manscaping shit, come on. I don't know if any of you guys manscape, but butch it up, all right?
It just takes too much time.
I used to go to the we got to wrap it up here too, to the Santa Monica 24-hour fitness, right? And I'm coming out, I'm getting out of the shower one day. And I mean, I'm gay. It's no secret. I'm the kind of, I was going to say I'm the kind of queer that hates fags, but that might have upset somebody. but I use it in my act. And the point is that it doesn't matter because I wasn't cruising anyway. I'm coming out of the shower. There's two nice looking young guys in the the steam area. One guy is shaving his nuts. The other guy is, they're talking and he's shaving his butt. And just like, and this is a dated story. They were talking about Tom Brady and that deflated football, you know. And this one guy goes, man, Tom Brady got screwed. And it just slipped out as I'm walking. I go, man, if you guys were at the 24-hour fitness in West Hollywood, you'd both be getting screwed right now. He goes, what? And, of course, I just went downstairs and handed him my badge. I was like, that was the last time I'm going. Yeah.
Well, you know, just, I know we got to wrap this up, but what I just said about your curse possibly being your gift and all that, and that ties right into John Mitchell, because, you know, all the problems he had, and, you know, part of what we're going to deal with in this part of the story is his PTSD from the war, you know, but it was all these problems he had that made him this, you know, never say die kind of guy that got this place going and gave us, you know, these talents that, you know, he gave Bob Dylan a job you know, it was basically, well, he can't sing, he can barely play guitar, but, you know, his words are good. You know,
listen, we got to wrap this up. I'm sorry, but here's this. Linda B. Schneider can attest to this. I know you're all in different places. We'll be, but maybe we can come back and do little split screens and on can to talk about this some more.
That would be cool. And also, if you wanted to do some interviews with some of the musicians and the actors that are here in Pittsburgh, we could do that.
Oh, that's a great idea. I'm looking for my notes. That's a great idea. Yes, I want to throw one more name out to you, sir. Russ Reagan. Did you know? Have you ever heard of him or know him?
I do not.
He was in the music business, and he tells me this story about Charles. His wife has the only existing reel-to-reel Charles Manson tapes of his band. And they're working on a documentary about it. He's a really cool guy. We'll talk about it. But anyway, look, thank you guys so much. Linda B. Schneider, it's always good to see you. I'm sorry about your arm. Fellas, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. But let's get back and do this again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Larry, you need to come
and
see
me. And I wanted to add, too.
Go ahead.
We're thrilled to have Thomas involved as our director.
Yes. We're thrilled Larry to be directing.
Wonderful
this.
To get to know him. And he's got great ideas. He brings a great energy. So we're super happy about having him on this.
We're the dream team. Everybody works so well together that we're already talking about other projects. And everybody has a different strength and a different weakness. So we're like the perfect combination dream team.
Yeah.
Wow. Then this means I'm definitely getting a walk-on part for something.
We'll come up with something.
I got your back, Bob.
Yeah. BobTheSurlyComic.com. Check out my Speedo commercial. If I never do another thing in front of I did this commercial in a Speedo, and it's freaking hilarious. And if I never get in front of the camera to do anything again, I did that. So we got to go. Thank you all for watching.
All right.
Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Bye-bye.
I love you. And guys, good to see you. And we'll talk again. We'll talk again soon.
Yes.
April 27th, 28th, Cutting Room Floor.
New York City. Be there or be square. Larry, come see me at the Mosaic Hotel in Beverly Hills. That's my rent-paying job.
Okay.
It's pretty cool. All right. So I guess we're wrapping. Aren't we, Sam? My Dennis.
You're listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.